On today's episode of Grow Great, the podcast, it's Quadrant One, the trifecta of business building, getting new clients, serving existing clients better, and not going crazy in the process. It's episode 4040. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Grow Great, the podcast. You can also find us at the website, growgreat.com. In episode 4039, we talked about the four quadrants of business building. And they're not really mathematical quadrants, but it's kind of the four building blocks of business building. Today, we're going to dive into quadrant one of the four. And just to review, quadrant one is getting new clients, serving existing clients better, and not going crazy in the process. Quadrant two is relationships and results. Quadrant three is activity and variety. And quadrant four is repentance. Well, some people prefer the term correction. We'll do it next. I hope you'll visit the website, growgreat.com, and subscribe to the podcast. You can do that through all of your favorite podcast catchers, including iTunes, Stitcher, whatever you prefer. Getting new clients or customers is listed first because until that happens, you don't have a business. I mean, until that happens, you don't have an organization. Until that happens, frankly, you got nothing. Now, maybe you don't call them clients. Maybe you don't call them customers. You might be a nonprofit. You might be a local government. You might be some other service organization that's not it's not directly involved in commerce. Doesn't matter. There are people that you serve. There are people who have an expectation of you and your organization. And if you don't serve anybody, then, well, I just don't even know why you exist. So first things first. You got to serve somebody. Bob Dylan years ago released a song by that title. It did have religious overtones. Spiritually, service is everything, namely serving God. In business, service is also everything, namely having a target audience that we can serve and an audience that wants us to serve them. There are two critical elements of this. One, we have to take aim at a specific group to serve. I mean, these are the people who are most benefited by what we have to offer. And number two, we have to take aim at a group that is willing to pay for our service or our product. That means that they have to see value in what we do. And we can't afford to get this half right. There are many groups out there who may need what you have. In fact, they might desperately need what you have, but what if they don't recognize the need? What if they don't understand the need? No sell. Try as you might, they're never going to buy from you because, well, they don't know they need what you've got. They don't believe that they need what you've got. When you enter quadrant one, you have to take care to really aim properly at a group that has a need, knows and understands that need, and has the ability to see that you provide a valued solution. And so identification, that really is just the beginning. You really need to vet the group by knowing the people, and the more the better. Marketers latch onto this practice of building an avatar. Now, of course, an avatar is a modern term that started out years ago being called a profile. They mean the same thing. You know, the FBI has profilers who do for crime what marketers do for business. They create a specific profile for the ideal person who is likely perpetrating this particular crime that we're trying to solve. Marketers do the same thing. Marketers create a profile for the ideal person who is likely to buy. Now, with all the focus on the tactical work of creating a great profile, some marketers get too focused on themselves. They approach this work, the work of getting a new customer, without any heart. Right? It's all data. It's all analytical. No emotion. Well, for good reason. We have more data. We have more data today on buyers than we have ever had before in the history of the planet. And data is a good thing. I'm all for it. The more, the better. Except when it screams for 100% of the attention without considering the motivations of buyers. Data, it can have an adverse effect, and I quite frequently find it does have an adverse effect by making marketers focus too much on it and not enough on the human emotions like desires and fears and pleasure and pain, all those things that really are behind the data. The most ancient marketing truth may be that people buy on emotion and justify it after the fact with logic. Now, it's a big sweeping generalization with varying degrees of accuracy because some buyers are more emotional than others. And other buyers, well, they're far more logical than emotional. But both are in play for everybody to various degrees. Buyers don't all come from the same place emotionally, logically, financially, or frankly in any other area that you could imagine or that you could even try to measure. A buyer without financial concerns, the person who just, they got more money than they need, they can behave as though they're on their last nickel. And another buyer with very limited resources, they can behave as though money is no object. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why marketing is hard, very, very hard. And it's why people and companies pay big money for marketing help. Marketing is part science and it's part art. And the art part is harder. I mean, frankly, today, anybody can do the science part. It requires heightened intuition. It requires a lot of empathy. It requires great vision, though, to execute effective marketing. And it's an imperfect craft. All you got to do is ask anybody who figured out a great marketing strategy that may have brought in tons of prospects. At some point, that brilliant strategy, that genius idea, it stopped working. Or it stopped working as well. Come on, even Dos Equis replaced the most interesting man in the world. Effective marketing is more like skeet shooting than fixed target shooting. It's hard to focus. It's hard to keep that focus on people that you're trying to serve. You bring your own motivations, and those motivations include your desires, your fears, your pains, your pleasures, but your prospects don't care about that. They care about their own because they've got their own, and it requires a special kind of discipline to get out of your own head into the head of the prospects. And then it requires even greater discipline to stay there long enough to be effective at marketing. The psychology of marketing, attracting new clients, is dynamic. All you have to do is look at your own life. I know it sometimes feels like you're living in a real life version of Groundhog Day, the movie, but you aren't. Your moods, your feelings, they ebb and they flow. And along with your optimism and your fears, because life impacts us every single day. One cell phone call can completely alter your mood. Your prospects are living the exact same way. Some days you eat the bear, some days the bear eats you. And it's that old phrase that just speaks to the bipolar nature of our lives. That's all that phrase means. One day you're up, one day you're down. But it's not even days. 1 minute you're up, 1 minute you're down. And it also speaks to why our marketing can never stop. Because you never know the timing of your offer. Right now, at this very moment, let's assume that the tires on your car are perfect. You're not thinking about tires. You don't need new tires. Any marketing that is done by local tire retailers or manufacturers is going to go right over your head because it's not on your radar. Later on this afternoon, though, let's suppose that you're on the freeway and you have a blowout and it completely wrecks your day, hacks you off, and suddenly now you're in the market for a tire. Maybe you're in the market for a whole set of tires. And it happens suddenly, unexpectedly. If there's a tire retailer who has achieved some top-of-mind status with you through their persistent and consistent marketing, then they're likely going to be your first call. In fact, they may be your only call. Buyers buy on their timetable, not yours. Your need for a sale doesn't matter. It's all about what your prospect wants and needs. And like skeet shooting, you don't know where they're at. You don't know if they're going to come from the left or the right. You don't know if they're going to go high or low. I mean, at the very moment that they need you the most, you got no idea. When they're ready to buy, they're ready to buy. Or at least they're ready to consider buying. Do you attract clients by focusing on their pain or pleasure? Do you pander to their fears or their hopes? Yes, and yes, and yes. That's why marketing is hard. You have to create messages that appeal to your ideal prospects. Ideal is optimal. It doesn't mean that you won't sell to some prospects who aren't ideal. If you think of it like fishing for some specific fish, like largemouth bass, that's ideal, right? We're looking for largemouth bass. That's the aim. But if you snag a 10-pound catfish, well, you're going to eat him for supper. You weren't trying to land a catfish, but this catfish, he liked your offer, and he took it, and you decided to keep him. Now, at the other end of the deal, you could snag a carp. Well, you don't want him. He goes back into the water. That's how marketing works. Sometimes you get this happy accident, a 10-pound catfish, a client that you really weren't aiming at, but you attracted that person anyway, and you decide, great, wonderful, I'm going to keep him. And sometimes you get a not-so-happy accident, a client that you weren't taking aim at, a client that you'd rather not have, and okay, maybe you'd make the decision to walk away. I'll give you a hint. Maybe it's ideal for you to best serve them by finding them a more suitable solution. I'll tell you what I do. True story. I give them to my arch enemy. I send the people that I perceive, this person's not good for me. This is not going to be, I'm going to refer them to the person that I like the least. It's a game and it's kind of fun. Come on, admit it. So how do we get new customers? Well, it's not difficult to dissect the process. It's the execution. That's what's really hard. Identify your ideal customer. Dig deep and figure out the emotions, not just the data points. And part of identification is figuring out where they are and how to best reach them. And again, not always easy. And it's not always where you may first think it is. You know, spend some time on this. It's important. And then when you do find them, you can't just go throw a stick of dynamite in the water and try to blow the whole thing up and let them float to the top. That's what the spammers do. That's what people that are just so out there. You need to be more service oriented. You need to be more subtle than that. So think of the difference between a fishing lure and a stick of dynamite, right? You want to be the lure. Craft your offer with the client in mind. Now, sure, it may be best to craft an offer people want. You hear it constantly with online advice. Give your customers what they ask for. Give your customers what they want. Ask your customers what they want. But what if you don't yet have a customer? Or what if you're unhappy with the present flow of customers? What do you do when your customers don't even know what they want? Apple invented the iPod not because customers were asking for it. Most customers couldn't imagine carrying around hours of music on a small digital device, but Apple did it anyway, and we lined up by the droves to buy them. Ditto with the iPhone. Customers are created when you can find a sweet spot of what people want and need enough so they'll pay for it, and pay enough to make it sustainable. Now, we could argue, would more people buy Apple products if they were 30% cheaper? Because Apple products are expensive. They're way above the industry average in every category that they compete. Well, sure. Sure, if they were 30% cheaper, more people would buy them, but it would wreck Apple's profit margin and Apple would stop being a highly sophisticated design company that they are. In short, if Apple were cheaper, Apple wouldn't be Apple. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hard work, best summed up in the phrase, figuring it out. And it doesn't matter if you're a stand-up comic or if you're a manufacturer, you need paying customers. Financial support is the most critical component of successful business building. No customers, no business. No revenue, no business. I mean, this is no time for weepy romanticism. It's time for facing the practical realities of the market, the collective power that will determine the winners and the losers. That's the market. Once you get them to buy, well, now the real work begins. You just thought it was hard up to this point. No, kids, it gets harder because now you have to deliver. Well, to be very clear, if you're operating with integrity, you must deliver. Now, thanks to the power of the internet, we see people and companies all the time who devote their time to all those top of the funnel activities. They're just worried about getting more people into the funnel and spitting out more customers at the bottom. They focus solely on getting new customers. I mean, these are transactional focused marketers. They don't much care about the customer experience. They don't even much care about repeat business. Some people pursue as much revenue generation as possible so they can just exploit the moment. Because in some cases, they know that this moment may go cold. And so it's that old adage of make hay while the sun shines. Well, the sun is shining and the sun may shine and it may give us this pet rock moment. You remember the pet rock? But it doesn't last. Doesn't have sustaining power. Good while it does last. I'm not talking about those kind of businesses. Those are not the kind of business models that I serve. Those aren't the people that I serve. And it's just not how I choose to roll. My clients, and hopefully your customers and your clients, are people and companies that we really want to serve well. We want them to be happy, not just satisfied with our work. We want them to say good things about us. We want their repeat business. We would like them to give us referrals. In short, we want to build the strongest customer base and the customer relationships possible. And so we focus real heavily on serving our clients better. This is mostly, not entirely, an operational thing. It's the how we do things. Now, too frequently, I see companies get this wrong because they can't or they won't maintain focus on the client. Systems, processes, workflows, those are all put into place because, well, they best serve us, not because they enhance the client experience. And maybe the most classic example of this is the airline industry. And yes, there are absolutely governmental regulations in play, but an awful lot of what happens to flyers doesn't have anything to do with regulations. It's got everything to do with how the airline is benefited. I mean, just this last week, who was it? Was it United? Talking about they're going to now start charging for overhead bin space. Okay, help me with this. I can certainly see the profit motive. I just can't see the customer service part of this. I can't see how the customer's benefited by this. Now, the airline industry is notorious. They've been doing this for a long, long time. Well, they've been doing it probably since the beginning at the expense of their paying customers. I mean, it is so rampantly bad in that industry that customers have been conditioned. We've been trained to accept poor service as just standard fare. It's just how it is when you fly. Well, we don't want to follow their example. Amazon, on the flip side, has become the poster child for superior service. And that's not by accident. That is by design. Millions and millions of dollars are spent each year by Amazon finding out how customers respond, how customers behave, what customers prefer, and delivering an experience that has come to be so utterly painless, in fact, I would argue pleasurable, that Amazon can consistently produce double-digit increases in revenues year over year. I mean, come on, when you are a multi-billion dollar company and you can have 20% growth year over year, that is no small feat, kids. Not when you're a multi-billion dollar company. You know, it's not easy, but it might be easier if you're generating $250,000 in gross revenue and you want to double it and maybe do $500,000 next year. That's spectacular. But now try growing double digits when the revenues are so crazy high like Amazon. That's a big accomplishment. How do they do it? They do it by being focused on you. They're focused on the buyer. Your shopping and your buying experience at Amazon? It's easy, man. It is easy. And who started that one-click purchase? Amazon. I rest my case. How easy are you to do business with? Do you focus on how the customer feels? Do you focus on how the customer perceives the process? Or do you focus on making it easy on yourself? I'm betting if you took a hard look at your systems and processes, you would find some, maybe many, of those things are cumbersome to the customer. I'm telling you to stop it. Sit down, vet all these things, remove the hurdles from the path of your customers. Make your company easy to do business with. Make the experience not just pain-free, but make it pleasurable for the customer. Well, now we come to the crazy part. Crazy. And it's not just a song by Patsy Cline or Gnarls Barkley. And no, those weren't the same song. Different song, same title. Crazy. It's you. It's you when things aren't going well. It's you when getting new clients isn't happening or when existing clients are complaining. It's also you when things at home aren't right. Got nothing to do with business. Welcome to the human race where problems and obstacles just pop up like a whack-a-mole game. Keeping your sanity is a big part of effective business building. Watch an NFL game. As I'm hitting the record button, today is Tuesday, December the 20th, 2016. And so the NFL is in week, I don't know, what are we in week? I don't know what week we are, 14? You know, we're getting down to playoffs and teams that have no hope of it, other teams that are on the cusp of it, and other teams, they've already got it locked and loaded. So the games, they're all important, but now the pressure's really on. And if you watch an NFL game, I mean, this past weekend, I saw countless episodes of this. And it won't matter if it's a quarterback. It won't matter if it's some other, you know, skill position. From the most regarded position to the least regarded, you may see a player. And keep in mind, all of these guys in the NFL, they are world class. They wouldn't be playing in the NFL if they weren't. But you'll see a player lose his mind. You will see a sideline fit that gets pitched. You will see helmets get thrown. You'll see water trays get knocked over. You see it in baseball as well. All because world-class professional athletes have, in this moment, they've lost their mind. And in that state, here's my question, are they able to perform at their best? No, of course not. Never. No. They have to rein in their emotions. They have to get a better grip on themselves. And some do, some don't. And those who don't, well, they end up just making things worse. And those who do, often they're not able, at least in that game, to make meaningful contributions. That's the power of going crazy. The distraction of going crazy takes a toll, robbing these professional world-class athletes of any chance for success. It'll happen to you too. And for you, it may not look like a temper tantrum. Well, it may. And maybe it's just a funk. And maybe it's caused by something at work. Maybe not. Doesn't matter. You're in a mood. Preoccupied, worried, fretful, anxious, sad, gloomy. You just attach whatever word that best describes it. And it can change, and you can go through a litany of these in the course of a day. In the course of a morning. And these aren't binary things. Every color of the rainbow can happen. I mean, 1 second's purple is the next second's red. And so it goes with your feelings and your emotions. Crazy. It's crazy. And now, crazy is not a clinical diagnosis. It's purely a man on the street kind of talk. We all experience it at various times. It's not a state from which growth can occur. But, and this is important, it is a state from which our response can spur growth. How we respond to our own crazy matters. So we want to respond well. Now, first, we have to recognize it. We have to understand the source. No proper response can be executed if we don't understand why we're going crazy. Second, we have to craft the best response to the source. Address the cause, address the source, and you're likely going to remedy the manifestation of your crazy. Now, if you're hot-headed, stop it. You need to exercise better self-control. Your bad temper is completely preventable, and I don't care what you think the cause of it is. It's a problem. Blowing up is not a valid or a valuable response, even if you think it's justified. You're wrong. You know, go pitch a wall-eyed fit every time something goes wrong. That's not leadership. That's childish, and that'll cost you, so stop it. Well-placed anger, on the other hand, used in proper context, and I will say this, even for theatrical purposes, it can be most effective. One is mindless, losing your temper. The other is mindful. Well-placed anger, used in good context. There's a big difference in being mindless and being mindful. Get in full touch with the source of your craziness. Figure out what you can do to alter your response to it. Maybe it's something you have no power over. The source, whatever that source is just, you just have to deal with it. I have encountered this year a number of leaders who have had major deaths in their family. Got no power over that. Can drive you crazy. Well, you're not going to get rid of that. You can't bring your loved one back to life. It's a reality that you have to process and deal with. You've got to figure out the best methodology for dealing with it, though, and recognizing it and not take it out on the wrong people or the wrong things. Harold Janine said, managers must manage. I've loved that quote my entire adult career. He was a tyrant, but that's a great quote, and he was right. Managers must manage. The point, figure it out. You've got to find a way. Third, learn from it. Stop being reactionary with knee-jerk emotional responses. Those don't help. Yes, it happens. We all do it. But don't let that define. Don't let that be the main characterization of your leadership. Make those exceptions to the rule instead of the rule. The rule needs to be that you're level-headed and you're thoughtful and you're mindful. My desire for you, just like all my clients, is to help you keep all three legs of this trifecta of business building on the floor all at the same time, to be getting new customers, to be serving existing customers better, and to not go crazy in the process. Now, if you can keep all three legs on the floor, it's a great thing. I will warn you, it's almost impossible to do it, but you got to try. Because when all three legs are solidly on the floor, you've got major traction. You've got major success. And when one leg comes off the floor, you've got to recognize it. You got to recognize it quickly. 1 inch off the floor is very different than 6 inches off the floor. So what you want to do is be so vigilant that you catch it early. And you try to course correct it very quickly by getting it back on the ground as soon as you can. When two legs come off the floor, you're in trouble. Now, don't panic, but you got to work really hard and fast to get one of them on the ground. Business building is about maintaining that stability. Don't overcomplicate things. Address things. Face things. Deal with them in a positive way. Work harder to fix what ails you so that you can move on beyond these old recurring problems. Do you ever come to the office and think, you know, I would so like to just have a new problem. I'm so tired of this same old problem. Every CEO I talk to expresses that. My challenge is always the same. Then fix it. Get it fixed. Yeah, you want to have some new problems. You want to incur some new problems, so quit letting these old problems nag you and drive you crazy. The most that you can keep these three legs on the floor, the longer and the more frequently you can keep all three legs on the floor of getting new clients, serving existing clients better, and not going crazy in the process, the greater your traction, the greater your odds of building something great. And that's our goal. It's absolutely our goal. We want to grow something great. Namely, we want to grow a great business. We want to grow great people. We want our own leadership to grow too. And there it is, kids. Half an hour spent with me about the trifecta of business building. It's been episode 4040. You can find the show notes for today's episode by going over to the website. In the sidebar, you'll find a place that says type the episode number here. If you just type in the number 4040, bam, take you right there. I'm glad that you're here. Visit the website, growgreat.com. You can find out all about me and what I do, who I serve, and how I do it. I'd love it if you would subscribe to the podcast. That's the big favor that I'm going to ask of you today. And being December the 20th, might be the last time I talk to you this year. I'm not sure. I might squeeze in one more episode, but I'm not going to make any promises. So, hey, if we don't talk until next year, happy holidays. Be safe. Stay warm. In Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, that's where I come from, and it's cold as crowd here. I don't mind telling you. We've been down in the teens, kids. So it's cold everywhere. Hey, greetings from inside the Yellow Studio.